That was our very own Dan Zangrilli moonlighting for three games in place of a vacationing Joe Block, who must have known it was the good time to get out of town and head to Belize instead of call these three games this weekend, where the Pirates turned in three stinkers consecutively against the lowly Chicago White Sox. I think, by the way, if you have a better record than a team that came in and just swept you even after the sweep, but they swept you, I feel like I put you below them. Like, if I were making an MLB power rankings for this week, Pirates have now dropped below the White Sox despite being four games better in terms of record. Reminder, too, listen to the PM Team on Demand. That's us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Dan Zangrilli himself is on the fan hotline right now, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Dan, I am often very sarcastic. You and I and Pony often trade very sarcastic barbs, but I will tell you this sincerely. I caught a good chunk of Friday's game while I was doing a couple errands after work in that evening, and I thought you sounded very good, so my hat's off to you. You stepped into what I know is a pressure-packed but fun situation, and I thought you did very well with it.
Well, thanks, man. Appreciate the kind words, refined ear, big ears, big head.
My ears, I think, are pretty normal-sized, so I think. The head, the cranium right now, I got a hat that, like, I think I overestimated the size of the hat even, because my head doesn't even fill this thing that I'm wearing.
Well, the big brain and the big head and the ears that go along with it. What I'm trying to say is it's a backhanded compliment that you have an acumen and a refined palate, right?
Refined
ears. So I take your praise very highly. I do. I'm serious about that. For real,
you
man,
had to be bummed, though.
Dream come true.
It had to be fun and a dream come true, but then they can't even give you, like, a competitive game into the ninth inning. Each game was pretty much over by the seventh inning stretch, man.
I couldn't even get a baseball to leave the yard either.
Right.
So yeah, kudos to Joe for like playing those cards perfectly. It was wonderful to do. I hope I have the opportunity to do it again. I mean, I will this year. There's a Cubs series. We'll let that out of the bag.
Oh, nice.
But you know, just fill in guy. Just kind of do whatever they tell me to do, crumbs wherever they land.
How long did it take to feel like you were kicking off, you'd knocked off, like, I'm not saying rust, you obviously do high school football, you're doing play-by-play still, but like the baseball rust or whatever, and feel like, okay, I've settled in and I feel good right now?
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing it and you're on the air, as we are, I don't want to say it's not that hard, it's a very complicated thing to do, but I felt okay with how it went. I was concerned about it, but I felt it had been about two or three years since I'd done actual baseball play-by-play live, and I felt okay, and hopefully it came across that way, and I just wanted to give the score and not screw it up and keep the seat warm and, you know, give people what they needed to know, and that's just the basics, the fundamentals. And, of course, I had literally, I would say, for my money, and you'd probably agree with this, maybe the best analyst in all of sports in Bob Walk. So that's a nice little safety net when you look to your left and somebody that you know and trust and like, because, you know, we work together, obviously, doing stuff on the postgame shows. That made things much, much easier. And, you know, you hear his name a lot on the air, like Doran Check. He's elite at what he does, engineer, producer. So I had the pillow fluffed mints on it and everything that I could have needed. So the infrastructure there was set up for success.
What a retroactive scene set by you about your own job play-by-play manning it. That was impressive. The mints on the pillow, the pillow fluffed. When you're up there, though, could you sense, because I'll now meld you doing play-by-play with the actual story of the weekend, which is just, oh my God, those three games. Mm-hmm. You're so locked in, I'm sure, to calling the action, to keeping on task, though. Are you, like, aware of just the mood and the anti-buzz in that ballpark that was forming and building, especially by, like, Saturday night? I know that wasn't the worst of the three games, but it felt like it a little bit with that Big Mac Miller crowd and them jumping out to a lead only to give it all the way back.
Yeah, and some unsuspecting characters, like with Ferguson and Mattson, guys that are pretty reliable. You sort of felt it then in that, what was it, a sixth run, sixth inning. And sure, you're locked into every pitch, and as a play-by-play guy, even more so than pre and post, I mean, you literally keep your two fingers on the pulse for every minute of the game. I mean, outside of the manager, the play-by-play guy, might be the most locked-in person in the ballpark. I felt it in the mood and the swings, and you're thinking of all of those things, considering how many games they had lost on the road trip coming in, and you could feel it. You know, the crowd, you're dialed into all of that, and it was, from that standpoint, really disappointing and sad and a bummer. And
does it feel like the low point of the time since Nutting's been the owner? Like, I'm talking the combination of what you expected coming in, they have Skeens, and just who the opponent was. It felt like a perfect storm. Like, man, you've watched bad baseball. I've watched bad baseball here. We've watched some good baseball too, for sure. But this just felt different this weekend. Like, just a total thud.
So I really listened to your opening comments, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying from the standpoint of, you know, it's not as bad or not as good. And I've really put a lot of thought in listening to your opening monologue and trying to put this in proper context. I certainly think it's in the conversation. We'll start there. And there's a strong case for that to be made. But I also, I'm going back to 2008. And the days of Jimmy Barthmeyer and Yoslan Herrera. I go back to 2010 and just those lifeless John Russell-led teams in 08, 09, 10. I mean, the Pirates got outscored by, 20 runs against the White
Sox? As Donnie put it, though, that 2010 team had Walker, Alvarez, McCutcheon, even Tabata when we thought he would be good. Like, there were some players there that were so young you could say, okay, at least these are the guys that are barely out of AAA that are supposed to be the future. Like, what? Really, where is that on this team? Their highest paid player is a veteran who's not producing. Cruz continues to be mercurial at best. I mean, that's kind of how I would differentiate this from 2010. There was at least some signs of what became the future there.
No. So, I mean, we might be splitting hairs here, but I mean, I would disagree. I think that there's a lot of pieces on this team, which I think, again, drives the angst and the frustration that they should be better. You know, like the pitching, that's something actually to be excited about. So, I mean, that's why I feel that, you know, that 08 team, when they were really scraping the bottom of the barrel, even like 06, 07, that's right around the transition because we're talking about the Nutting era specifically.
Yep.
You know, they're dealing from Matt Morris. And so I this is definitely part of the conversation, but I'm going to stop short. And I think of the Will Craig rundown. Is that being quote-unquote the bottom, if that's what we're talking about? You know, that was just a real low point. But yeah, I mean, there's a compelling case to be made considering where the expectation is, where the team sits, the assets that you do have that you're not capitalizing on, tangible progress that should be made that isn't made. I think they're on paces for 98 losses as we sit here today. I'm going to stop short of saying, like, ranking it one up. Can I meet you in the middle? Am I taking the easy way out by putting it
probably
in the top three?
Can you tell me this? Because I might have missed this, Dan, and maybe you have an answer. I've looked around and haven't seen anything, and that just might be because I'm dumb and missed something obvious. Did they give a specific reason why they didn't pitch Skeens in this series coming out of the break and held him for this first game of the Tigers series?
No, I think they just wanted to give him a break. I mean, I think they're very mindful of the innings, and the same could be said for Keller. I mean, they're looking ahead as to what everybody is projecting towards, and I think as they reassemble the deck chairs, that's certainly it for Skeens, I would say, and Keller for sure. He's on pace for another career high in innings, so they're just being mindful. They want to increase the workload, but they don't want it to be a crazy hockey stick. And again, they wanted to also, I think, give the guy a bit of a breather.
He's Dan Zangrilli, did an excellent job filling in for Joe Block on play-by-play, and he'll be doing it again at a Cubs-Pirates series near you later on this season. Thank you, Dan.
All right, Malsy, thanks, buddy.